This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. As we go to air Monday morning, more than 68,000 people have tested positive for the coronavirus in Illinois, and at least 2,974 people have died from the disease. That's 2,974 mothers and fathers, grandmothers and grandfathers, brothers, sisters, sons, and daughters. How do you commemorate so many lives lost? Later this hour, we'll talk to someone who's doing just that as one of the lead obituary writers at the Chicago Tribune. We'll also look at how our social norms have changed on account of COVID-19 and try to look ahead to which ones might stick after we're on the other side of this pandemic. But first, this morning, Governor J.B. Pritzker's office announced that staff would begin working from home after a member of the administration tested positive for COVID-19. Quote, the asymptomatic staff member tested positive late last week and was in close contact with the governor and other staff members. Unquote. This is the second time a member of the administration has tested positive. The last was in late March and early April. The administration says Pritzker and the other roughly 20 staff members who've been working at the Thompson Center in Chicago all tested negative, but all the same, they'll begin working from home. Meanwhile, critical voices keep pecking at the governor's stay-at-home orders, especially from the opposition political party. Republican congressional challenger Jeannie Ives has a petition encouraging Pritzker to allow youth sports leagues this summer. But even the Illinois Restaurant Association has become a critic. It's notable because it was one of the few business groups to support Pritzker's first major piece of legislation, gradual increases in the minimum wage over the next several years. They say now his phased plan for reopening is not fast enough for the restaurant industry. Joining us to talk about this and more are three reporters who've been covering the pandemic in different parts of Illinois. Jenna Dooley is the news director at Northern Public Radio, WNIJ, in DeKalb and Rockford. Jamie Nesbitt-Golden is a reporter with the news site Block Club Chicago, where she covers the neighborhoods of Englewood, Auburn, Gresham, and Chatham on the south side. And Mary Hansen is a reporter for NPR Illinois, WUIS in Springfield. Jenna, Jamie, Mary, thanks for being here today. And Mary, I will start with you. That awkward, how do you say hello at the beginning of the radio segment? Mary, I'm going to start with you. What are you seeing in Springfield and the surrounding areas?
Yeah, so in Springfield, you know, for in terms of cases, it's easiest to talk about in terms of the county because that's how they track. So here in Sangamon County, there's 270 confirmed cases and about two dozen deaths. And Springfield and Sangamon County were sort of plugging along, seeing maybe one or two cases per day up until about mid-April when there was an outbreak at a long-term care facility just north of Springfield in Sherman, the Villas East. At the end of April, the state sent a bunch of test kits in there to test all the staff and all the residents, no matter if they were showing symptoms or not. And we saw a big increase in the number of cases. So just in that facility alone, there are about 104 confirmed cases and 20 deaths of residents, unfortunately. So a big number of the confirmed cases and deaths associated with the county are from just that one facility.
And Jamie, you, as we said a moment ago, you cover a few neighborhoods on the south side of Chicago. What are you seeing there?
A lot of the same, but people in these neighborhoods are worried about not having access to testing. That's like one of the big issues. While several more testing sites have opened on the south and southwest sides, it's still a matter of making the tests more accessible to residents. A lot of these places are drive-through or drive-up facilities. A lot of people don't have cars. So now you have to figure out how to safely test folks who, don't have access to reliable transportation. I'm also seeing a lot of organizations on the ground sort of rally together and try to, help their, help residents themselves. While they're getting some help from the city, most of these organizations are relying on donations and themselves to sort of, keep, their neighbors safe.
Hmm.
A lot of mutual aid work, I should say.
And I'm going to come back to that a little later in our conversation, because I've been reading some of your coverage about, you know, say a food pantry that got some help from some people at the University of Chicago. But we'll come back to that. Jenna, I've seen Rockford, which is in your listening area at WNIJ. I've seen Rockford described as a hotspot for COVID-19. What are you and your members of your news team seeing on the ground there?
Winnebago County has 926 positive cases, and there are those clusters of concern, including the Winnebago County Jail and in longer-term care facilities like Mary mentioned, and what we're seeing in other areas of the country. There's also a cluster of concern at a residential facility for young adults receiving treatment for mental health and substance disorders. But the term hotspot is polarizing itself. Supporters of economic reopening, they did rally at an intersection in Rockford over the weekend. The Rockford Register Star had a slideshow on their website from the event. And in one, there was a man holding a sign, and he's decrying that term hotspot to characterize the Winnebago County numbers. The sign said 26 deaths out of the total county population of about 300,000 is not a hotspot.
You know, I saw a story that caught my attention from Rockford last week about some issue with the testing site there. I gather that some tests, well, the initial story was some tests went missing, the state was called in, and then apparently, I don't know, the lab was like reporting results using carrier pigeons or something. Can you tell me like what happened there?
Well, the plea came from the Winnebago County Board Chairman to the governor. He wrote a letter, a public letter, and it said more than 2,000 tests were missing. Those tests took place at a community-based drive-through testing site operated by the Illinois National Guard. But what happened is that the tests were delayed. They weren't missing. It was a new lab struggling with electronic reporting capabilities. So the state responded back, and now those results are being sent to another lab that does have the capacity to do electronic results much faster. The county health director, Sandra Martell, though, is assuring those who were tested at that site, they have a full manifest of everyone who is tested. They have the full information. But she cautions that the delay, if it took weeks to get these test results, it's a real concern because that hampers those efforts to slow the spread of the virus.
You know, Jamie, you mentioned a moment ago that the testing was also a concern on the south and southwest sides of Chicago. Is it an issue of capacity or the amount of testing sites? What is the big concern there?
The amount of testing sites, really. There were, when the pandemic first started, there weren't really a lot of testing sites on the south side. In the weeks since the shelter in place order, there have been several hospitals, like Roseland, but Roseland Community Hospital is one testing site that opened. Another one opened in Auburn Gresham, the Christian Community Health Center. But they're still pretty spread out, and it's really hard, again, to get to these places if you don't have a car. I think both of them are drive-through sites. You don't really have any walk-up sites in these areas, which poses a problem.
So let's take sort of a step back from what people are seeing on the ground. And Mary, I want to return to you because last week you did some coverage of Governor J.B. Pritzker's five-phase plan to begin allowing certain businesses and activities to resume, and eventually it would reopen schools. Can you give us kind of the sort of summation view? What are some of the highlights of that plan?
Yeah, so it is, as you mentioned, a five-step plan. We're actually in step two, so it's a bit of a sort of retroactive. They're calling step one the stay-at-home order, those sort of strict restrictions that were happening from March through May 1st, and then as of May 1st, we entered phase two, you know, still under the stay-at-home order, but some outdoor activities being allowed now. And then, you know, like golfing and things like that. And then to get from phase two to phase, well, I should say first, the state is being divided up into four regions, sort of Chicago, North Central Illinois, they're calling it, from like the Wisconsin border all the way down to Peoria and Bloomington, Central Illinois, so from Quincy to the border with Indiana, including Champaign-Urbana and Springfield, and then all of Southern Illinois with the Metro East and Carbondale. So those regions have gotten some criticism. Some of the Republicans say those regions are far too big and, you know, don't take into account sort of some of the more localized things that are happening. But back to the phases, we're in phase two, as I mentioned, and to get to phase three and phase four, there's sort of similar similar requirements. We have to have, a region has to have 14 days of a stable positivity rate in terms of tests, and that has to be below 20% or declining, and then 28 days of stable hospital admissions, as well as more robust testing and tracing. And the 28 days is another another thing that's sort of drawn some criticism, you know, from different people saying, you know, other states are looking at just the 14 days in between, you know, moving from phase to phase, because that's the what's thought to be the incubation period for the disease. So we're looking at moving to phase three, which would open more offices, more retail, and then potentially onto phase four would maybe come at the end of June for some of these regions, which would be, you know, restaurants opening and schools, and then finally onto phase five, which would be the, you know, sort of more back to normal. But to get from phase four to phase five, the governor has said what we need is either a vaccine or an effective treatment. So that could be a long way off.
Yeah, and we're kind of just a few minutes left in our segment today, but Mary, getting to phase four, I understand, is where the restaurants can reopen, right? And that particular thing, and as you said, 28 days, that could be a couple of months off before we could get to that point. And there's been some pushback from the Restaurant Association?
Yeah, so the Restaurant Association is pushing to have restaurants be able to open in phase three. So that would be, you know, at the end, potentially at the end of May for some of these regions if they meet those benchmarks, instead of phase four, which wouldn't be until the end of June at the earliest. And they're saying, you know, we work with public health departments all the time to meet food regulations or, you know, food safety regulations. We're all trained in this sort of stuff, and we believe that our industry can handle these additional regulations and then make it a safe environment for people to go out to eat again. And, you know, they also employ a lot of people across mm-hmm. the state. The governor was asked about this on Friday, and he said, you know, from the public health officials and the epidemiologists that he's talked to, restaurants are a little bit more difficult than, say, an office or another place to make it safe and to sort of stop the spread in that environment. So he's holding firm at the moment.
Jamie, in Chicago, do you get the sense in talking to people that they're itching to get out and about, to go to restaurants or go back to work, that sort of thing?
They want to, but they're also very, very wary of it. Mm-hmm. And for the most part, they're willing to stick it out for as long as they're supposed to. And even after, you know, we get the green light, I'm not really sure if people are going to be rushing back to these places. But there is a restlessness. There's also anxiety about, you know, what lies ahead, I believe. But I do see a lot of people not really adhering to the mask requirement, which is a little scary.
Yeah, for me. Interesting.
But, you know, you have folks who feel as though that, you know, that this virus won't hurt them, so they feel comfortable to go out without any protective gear.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because there has been this coverage of this disconnect in Chicago between the government officials and the media, you know, giving this guidance on the one hand, and particularly some younger members of the African American community on the other. And we actually had a conversation about this on the show last week, and I wonder, are you seeing evidence of that divide, or that the city is doing something to meet people where they are?
Yeah, I definitely am seeing the divide. I think we have a tendency to sort of, as adults, condescend to youth, particularly Black youth. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pull up your pants, do right, you know, be better. But if you aren't given hope, and if you're constantly told that you're a screw up, you're going to sort of not care about what happens. There's this sort of a nihilistic POV that these kids have, because no one's talking to them, they're talking at them. That said, I think Lori Lightfoot getting on Zoom with Jamal Green last weekend was definitely a step in the right direction, sort of talking to these kids, hearing them out. As a matter of fact, Jamal Green has a whole 5-day virtual series sort of planned to, you know, sort of that's aimed at, you know, Chicago kids and young adults to sort of get them involved in the conversation because they haven't really been a part of it. So I do think that, you know, her taking the time out to join that discussion is great. I think that she was willing to hear the criticism about approaching the kids on the street and sort of, you know, admonishing them. I think she took that advice to heart, and I think changing their approach and how we talk to these kids will make the difference in the long run.
Okay. Well, I'm afraid that is all the time we have for this segment. I'm sorry, there's so much more we wanted to talk about. We will have links to all the coverage that you and your colleagues have been doing. The interesting story about University of Chicago volunteers staffing a food bank is on Block Club Chicago, the food bank that was on the brink of closure. And Jenna, I know one of your colleagues has been doing work on how homeless shelters are trying to reach people who can't abide by the governor's stay-at-home orders. We'll have links to all that on our website and our Twitter page, 21stshow, 21stshow.org. I want to thank Jenna Dooley of Northern Public Radio, Jamie Nesbitt-Golden from Block Club Chicago, and Mary Hansen from NPR Illinois. Thank you all so much for being with me this morning.
Thank you, Brian.
Thank you.
Coming up, a conversation on changing social norms during the pandemic. Is the handshake gone for good? Stay with us. More to come in just a moment.